You know, Frankie didn't talk much. You know, Frank, you know, even on those tapes.
Yeah.
You know, and I even heard that he actually, when they first started going up in that apartment, I actually heard he brought a thing up there that you pressed a button and you heard like 10 different conversations. And John made him shut it off.
Wow. Well, it sounds like he had a little bit more insight of what the government could have been doing, you know, than John.
I would like to ask Sammy if that's true or not, but that's what I have. That's what I heard.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade. Now, that clip there was from a Behind the Gangster episode. Everybody loves the Behind the Gangsters that I've done with Anthony Ruggiano. And we're talking about Frankie Loke, Frank LoCascio. Now, Frank was actually indicted along with Sammy Gravano and John Gotti on December 11th, 1990. He faced racketeering charges and would actually wind up dying in prison. Passed away not too long ago, a few months back. Unfortunately, never did get a chance to get out. I think he applied for a compassionate release, but that was not granted to him. But a very interesting individual, very sharp guy. There's different stories that you hear. He was 100% devoted to John. Sammy said that he and Frankie had discussions of possibly taking John out had they beat the case that they were in. So who knows? But this is a little inside look here with Anthony Ruggiano on Behind the Gangster on Frank LoCascio.
Hi, everybody. My name is Anthony Ruggiano Jr., and I want to welcome everybody to Reform Gangsters, and I want to welcome my guest, Wade, back again.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good.
So we're going to do another one of these Behind the Gangsters here. I'm starting to enjoy these things.
Yes,
they're going
sir.
Good. Gives everybody a little insight, not too deep to where you can get lost, but just enough to get to know the person.
Right.
And another guy that's been, you know, portrayed in some of the Gotti movies, not necessarily a deep character, but definitely, you know, instrumental in the real life situations of all this was going on, Frankie Loke.
Yeah, Frankie Loke. You know, he goes back a long way. You know, he goes back to the Anastasia days with my father. My father knew him since they were kids. Actually, I believe my father told me that him and Frankie were at one point the two youngest people to be made in that era. At that time, they didn't get made together. My father got made when the books were closed. I believe maybe Frankie might have also, but not. I don't believe they were together. The ceremony was the same at the same time, but they go back to that era, which is and my father always used to tell me that Frankie Loke was a vicious guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very vicious guy. He was a killer. He was a vicious guy, and he had made a lot of money. His son Tori made a lot of money. They invented the sex phone ring, the 900 numbers. That was their thing. He was out of the Bronx. He had a big Albanian crew with him that were killers. This guy Zeff. He was a tough guy, Frankie.
I tell you, when you look at somebody's, obviously, I didn't know a lot of these guys. You knew a number of these guys personally. So when you're looking them up as I do, and you see pictures, you just kind of make an assumption based off what you see in pictures. And there's two guys that would really, I think, scare me if I had to come face to face with them. One, Neil Delacroce, and the second one being Frankie. Look, I mean, he just had a look where like that would not want to be a guy you were having to face, especially if you were on the wrong end of whatever the situation was.
Yeah, he was a vicious guy. My father used to tell me all the time, you know, he used to tell me he liked to chop people up.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, he was a killer. I mean, you know, like he was vicious. You know, there was a guy around him when he was a captain. There was a guy around him, another wise guy that was in his crew that was in prison. And, you know, the guy's two sons were wild kids in the Bronx. They were two bad kids. I mean, dangerous kids. And they both got killed. They both got clipped. And my father always believed that, you know, Frankie gave the order because, you know, nobody would have done it unless Frankie okayed it.
Right.
My father was in prison with the guy. I met him, Porgy. I think his nickname was Porgy or something. I don't really remember his nickname. But my father was in Petersburg with him. So he was a vicious guy, big money earner, Very well respected, feared. Always was good to me. Always said hello to me. I mean, I got along good with him. I didn't know his son too well. He straightened out his son, Tori, who actually now left New York, basically ran away. I mean, just left the life.
Well, I mean, and you spoke, he grew up, I think he was born in 1932, and by the 50s, early 50s, you know, he was running numbers, you know, doing bookmaking, like you said, during the Albert Anastasia days. And I think you said at 23, he was straightened out. That's pretty young.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's high numbers.
Yeah, my father got straightened out when he was 26, 25, and 53, yeah. Yeah, they're young kids. I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, I look at my daughter, my son, you know, I know, you know, where I work now, you know, kids come in now at 23, 24, they're like babies. And I look at them and I go, Jesus Christ, you know, I was already married at 23 and my father was already a wise guy at their age, you know, like, yeah. I think it's a different era. I think I don't know if they were ever kids, them people.
Yeah.
Like my father and Frankie, you know, they came from poverty. You know, I don't think they had a chance to be kids.
Yeah, had to grow up real fast.
Make some money, you know, and they're in the street. You know, who has all the money? Who has all the flesh? The mob guys, you know, they're capable of hurting people, and that's it.
And it's interesting, too, if you look at him. So he comes up under Albert. Then, obviously, Gambino takes over after Albert's taken out. Then, you know, Gambino has his run. Then Paul, then John. And then he ultimately does go to prison with John and Sammy. That's a long time to be in that guy. I mean, he's seen a lot of different guys take the run of the family.
Yes.
And to make it, number one, to make it through that alive, you got to be pretty smart and swift and be on your A game. But two, I mean, he had to have a lot of knowledge of everything that was going on. When was the first time that you remember actually meeting Frankie?
I met him when I first started going to the Ravenite with my father. I met him. I met him at the Ravenite. I met a lot of them at the Ravenite. I don't know. I probably was about... The first time I met Frankie, I was probably 17 or 18. I met him in the Ravenite. We had dinner with him a few times, you know, throughout the years with my father. I mean, I never did any business with him. I did business with people that were with him. You know, I went to a lot of clubs where guys that were with him ran, like that Albanian crew. They ran a lot of, they had a lot of, like they ran a lot of valet services in Manhattan, and they had a lot of front doors. Like they had scores, like Frankie Loke had scores, the strip joint, and the Albanian crew, they ran it. They had a restaurant in there. They had the parking, the valet. I mean, they pretty much ran the crew. So, you know, I did business with them, but I never did business with him. I knew his son, but he was always in the Ravenite. I mean, practically almost every time I went to the Ravenite with my father or with Tony Lee, he was always there. He was always at the Ravenite. So that's basically where I ran into him.
Yeah, I read that he was mentored, and I don't know if you know these names, but there was a Michael and an Anthony Sodato, I think was the name. They said that they was kind of his mentors coming up. They were brothers, pretty big heavyweights, but that was early on.
Yeah,
yeah, that was kind of who was mentoring him. But obviously, like I said, they've done a good job because he stayed in the life for...
And he made a ton of money. He made a lot of money. He made a lot of money.
What was his biggest thing? Bookmaking, gambling?
Bookmaking. Then the sex phones.
The sex phones.
The phone cards. The sex phones were... So what happened was they latched onto these two guys. They're both in jail, and I forget their names. And he straightened them both out. They latched onto these two guys that were very intelligent guys, and they invented the sex phone thing with the people in another country answering the phone, the woman, and it blew up. It was became a multi-million dollar business with his son, Tori. And then they all got arrested, and Tori went to jail, and Tori left. And Frankie became under boss, the counselor. And I know we talked about it earlier. Sammy says that he was a figurehead, you know. But, I mean, I was led to believe... Maybe between them, they knew he was a figurehead, but I was led to believe that he was the counselor, and he was the underboss, and then John knocked him down. And then John knocked him down from being counselor. And I remember John saying, because I heard it from John's own lips, he was telling Tony Lee and somebody else, after they took Frankie down from being the counselor, John said that, as far as he was concerned, the counselor position was a useless position. That's what he said, and he didn't think he needed Frankie, but Frankie Loke still got indicted with the three of them.
Yeah. Well, there was a video that Sammy put out not too long ago where he was saying that, you know, even though he did hell, he was holding that position. It was more or less of a temporary or just a placement, yes. Not an official, okay, this is your position.
Exactly.
So I always found that interesting. Now, when Paul was boss, what was Frankie's placement? In
I believe Paul made Frankie a captain.
Yeah.
I believe Paul made Frankie a captain. Because you know he was the whole package, you know. Mm-hmm. He was like John and my father and Sammy. He was an earner and he was a killer. Mm-hmm. So he had the whole package. It wasn't either one or the other. He had all the tools. So he was in a good spot.
Okay. So whenever they decided they were going to take out Paul, where was Frankie's loyalties? I mean, was it to Paul? Did they have to convince him it was better to go ahead and take
Frankie
him out?
Frankie was all in. I believe Frankie was one of the shooters.
Was he?
I believe so, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. He was one of the shooters. Yeah. He was one. What I think it was him and the other I think there was two shooters on Paul and one shooter on
Bilotti.
On Bilotti. Yeah, no, he was all in. He was all in. He was a thug.
Yeah.
He was all in. He was no politician. He was a thug. That whole crew, that whole Neil, whoever hung out in the Raven, was it.
Mm-hmm.
It was the people from Brooklyn, from that neighborhood where Paul came from. Those are the ones. That's why they had to get Sammy and they and Frankie DiCicco. That was the crew they were concerned about. The Raven Eye crew, they were all in. They didn't like Paul,
right?
And they resented the fact that he was the boss and not Neil. And Loke was his crew. The Raven Eye was his crew.
So you've seen a lot of him in the 96 Gotti. He was portrayed by Raymond Sierra. Kind of had a funny voice the way he talked.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of dialogue, and a great dialogue in that scene. I think the movie starts off, they're sitting in prison, and they're talking, yeah. And they're talking about everything. But then they have conversations throughout, and we kind of touched on that in our Sammy Gravano episode, where they kind of start piecing together that maybe Sammy had kind of maybe played them against each other in order to take over some of these businesses. One of the guys that was really key and when Frankie went down was a guy named Louis DeBono. What do you know about Louis DeBono?
You know, I met Louis a few times at the Raven Night. I don't really know much about him. He was, you know, I know they clipped him in the garage. I really didn't know much about him. I know that they say he didn't come in. You know, people say that he was close to Paul.
Right.
He was close to Paul. And he had some money. He had a lot of money. And when he didn't come in to see John, when they sent for him, John felt like if anybody could start an internal beef, it would have been him, because he had the money and he had the power and he had the guys with him that could start some trouble. And he went.
Mm-hmm.
And he went because he didn't come in. I mean, that's a no-no. When the boss sends for you, you go.
Yeah.
You know, you go. No matter what, if you're going to get killed, I mean, listen, you go. And he didn't. And the reason why the rumor was, or the word they put out for us to believe, was because he was maybe trying to make a move. Was that true or not? I don't know. That was what they said. He was trying to make, and he had the power to possibly do that.
Well, they were on wiretaps where John and Frank were discussing him, and John basically said, you know, he's killed for nothing else, the fact that he didn't come in here.
Yeah.
And Frankie was trying to say, maybe I'll get him to get a package together. I want to say like 50 grand to try to make things right.
Him.
And John even said, you know, I don't want to take nothing from him because he's gone.
Plus, John needed to make an example.
Right.
He was the boss. He just became the boss. You know, he needed to make an example to everybody else. Like, listen, I'm not going to tolerate. When I send for you, you come. I'm not going to tolerate anything. And he was the example. Mm-hmm. You know, Frankie didn't talk much, you know, even on those tapes, you know, and I even heard that he actually, when they first started going up in that apartment, I actually heard he brought a thing up there that you pressed a button and you heard like 10 different conversations and John made him shut it off.
Wow. Well, it sounds like he had a little bit more insight of what the government could have been doing than John.
I would like to ask Sammy if that's true or not, but that's what I heard. That he actually brought a thing up there that was to interfere with if there was bugs up there, and John made him shut it off.
So when you said that, or, you know, obviously we don't know 100%, but when he was placed in that position and he got knocked down, Do you know that if there was any resentment to John, or was it?
I never saw any. He still came around. I mean, it wasn't like he sent out any vibes. He still came around. I mean, he was still a skipper. He had so much money. He still had a lot of power. He still was respected. I don't think he took it personal. I mean, I never heard that from anybody. I never saw that. I mean, I don't know for sure. I wasn't that involved with them. Don't forget, you know, that was way above my head. Mm-hmm. Tony Lee never mentioned anything to me about it. You know, he was. Like I said, every time I went to the Raven night, he was still there. He was still privy to, you know, going up to that apartment. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though he might not have been officially part of the Bugatta, he still was in that apartment having those conversations with Sammy and John. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy died in jail. He got life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a couple of years ago, I think, or a year or so ago, he died.
He tried to get out on a compassionate release. They wouldn't let him.
Yeah. Now, when he gets arrested, he's arrested with, obviously, John Gotti, Sammy the Bull, and there's a funny story. I don't know if that's true or not, but supposedly when they went into the Raven night that night, John Gotti asked him if he could finish his cup of coffee before they.
Yeah, he said, "Well, that's what the agent." I was on the show with that agent, and he said that when they went into the Raven night, John said, "I knew you were coming," and the agent goes, "Well, you knew I was coming. I'm here," and he said, "Oh, just let me finish my." Arrogantly said, "Let me just finish my cup of coffee," and they let him finish his cup of coffee. And that was the last cup of coffee he ever had on Mulberry Street.
Well, the real interesting part here in this is when they went to court, Frankie stands up and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not guilty of anything but being a friend to John Gotti."
Yeah.
And then he says, "If there was more people like John Gotti in this world, the world would be a better place."
Yeah.
Sammy paints a different story. He says that Frankie was actually in agreements with him to take Gotti out. Well, where do you think the truth lies in between these two narratives?
Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah, that's a tough one. I know I heard Sammy say that many times. They were discussing it in MCC to kill John. You know, knowing what I know about Sammy and knowing what I know about Frankie through the stories my father told me about Frankie, I think I believe Sammy. Mm-hmm. I think that would, because like I said, they were both vicious. They were both killers. And I put myself in their spot, and I was sort of would have blamed John for me being in that position.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as much as I love John and as much as he helped me and I respect him and everything, you know, he had no business going up in that apartment. Let's be real. I mean, that was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. In that day and age, you know they're on you. You know you got 24-hour-a-day surveillance. You know, you have no business. And that goes for Sammy and Frankie, but they had no choice. He was the boss. If he told them to come meet me up in that apartment, they had to go. Mm-hmm. So now they're in jail. I believe they had that conversation, knowing what I know about that life and putting myself in that position or thinking what my father would have done in that position. I believe they had a conversation like that.
Even if he wasn't 100% sold on doing it, I believe he at least went along with the conversation.
Without a doubt.
To, if not really take it to heart and think about it, at least take it back to John and say, "Look here, this is what he's planning." So I definitely think that conversation.
Listen, them conversations were had. Listen, Joe Colombo became the boss of a family over a conversation like that.
Yeah.
When they went to him to kill Carl and he told Carl. You know what I mean? So that conversations happened many times over. But knowing what I know and how I would have played it and reacted to it, I think that conversation was had. Whether they were going to go through with it or not is another story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, they're in an apartment talking about murders, and there's a bug. You know, why are you in that apartment? Well, I'm in that apartment because my boss told me to be in that apartment. So, I'm sure there was a little resentment.
Yeah. And according to Sammy also, he says that, you know, I think John reached out to F. Lee Bailey, and he told him basically just once he heard the tapes that you're sunk, you really got no chance.
No, none.
And he said, "Well, you know, I got a secret weapon." He's like, what kind of secret weapon are you going to do to get you out of this? And basically it was for Sammy and Frankie to take the fall and John get out. Now, I don't know, you know, how true that may have been, but there's also reports that once they were in prison, that John reached out to the AB, the Aryan Brotherhood, to take out Frankie. Now, I don't know if I've ever heard anything else about that. I don't know if you'd ever heard anything about that either.
I never heard anything about that. And I don't know about, you know, John telling people to take the weight so he could get out in the street. I mean,
that doesn't sound like John to me.
It doesn't sound like John to me either. You know, like, I don't want to say people are liars, but stuff gets fluffed up. I mean, I don't know. That's hard to swallow that John would do that. You know, like, that's sort of like a rap move. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I get, you know, maybe if he says, I'll take care of you.
You know, like, I know, like, I know, like, you know, if you're on cases and, you know, and yeah, some people take the weight, you know, say, all right, I'll take the weight for this. And, you know, like, they'll volunteer, you know, they're not being told to take the weight, you know, like, you know.
Like we said earlier when Sammy done that for his son, you know, some people
Yeah,
step
right.
Up,
you know, yeah, step up. Listen, you, I'll take the weight for this and just take care of my family or whatever. But for someone to tell somebody, listen, you take the weight for this so I could go on the street, like, what are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. And ultimately, those tapes are a lot of, I think, what led to Sammy flipping, if you heard the tapes.
Without a doubt, yeah, because he was implemented on a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, he was implemented on a lot of stuff, and you know, and that wasn't right either.
Yeah, and Frankie's sitting right there with him having these conversations.
Yeah, you know, they're having conversations there about Sammy without Sammy being there to defend himself. You know, they're talking bad about the guy. He's your underboss. But you got to understand, that's who John was. Mm-hmm. John talked bad about everybody. But that doesn't mean he didn't care about you and he didn't love you. He used to tell people, I'll make some freak out of you, I'll chop you up. And, you know, he used to abuse that. You know, he never abused me, thank God. But I'm sure he said a few choice things about me when I wasn't around, too. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I had a lot of bad habits, you know. But that's just who he was. He was always, you know, he that's how he talked.
Well, the one thing I can say about Frankie is we've kind of mentioned, you know, he spent years in this life. Went in, I'm sure there's stuff that he knew that he could have told to have gotten out of prison, and yet he didn't say a thing. He kept his mouth shut, a lot like John did his time.
Plus, he could have corroborated everything Sammy said. It would have been better for the government. Now you have two of them. You know, Sammy went in front of the Senate and gave up the boxing industry. And, that, you know, Sammy's testimony was huge for the government. I mean, you know, he testified at a lot of trials. He testified in front of Congress. I mean, you know, Sammy could have been right. Frankie could have been right next to him, corroborating everything he said. That would have been a home run a grand slam for the government. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but he was old school, like my own man. You know, he came from a different era. And, you know, he went down with the ship. I mean, he stood up. You know, he stood up and he died in jail.
And like you said, you touched on earlier, he tried to get compassionate release. He tried to get him to bring those tapes back in because the whole deal was they were saying that he basically knew DeBono, who, like you said, I think got shot in the parking lot of the World Trade Center, was going to get hit. He tried to stop it by saying, look, let's just let him pay a tax or whatever. The government tried to spin it as he knew it was going to happen, yet he didn't do anything to stop it.
Exactly.
So he was trying to use that to get a return on his conviction, and Sammy even come back and corroborated all that. Said he didn't have anything to do with it.
I was just going to talk about that. Now, even though Frankie stood up, he was never supposed to reach out to Sammy for help. That's a rap move in that life. Like, believe me, if John Gotti was alive, when he did that, you're not supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not supposed to do that. There's no way that he's supposed to reach out for Sammy to get help after Sammy cooperated against everybody. You don't do that in that life. But, you know, that's what the mob is all about today. You know, you just don't do that. You don't reach out to a cooperator for help. That's a big no-no. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and that's what's comical now today about it. You know, like here's this guy stood up all this time. You know, like he didn't care no more, you know, because he didn't want to die in jail, which I don't blame him. He didn't want to die in jail. Who wants to die in jail? But, you know, I know that if John was alive, he would probably got shelved or you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that, you know. And Sammy knew that, but Sammy tried to help him.
Yeah,
you know,
Sammy tried to help him
because I think Sammy felt sorry for him because he didn't deserve for that to happen to him. Frankie, he wasn't on many of the tapes. He did try to save people, you know, but he was more caught up in a conspiracy. He stood up, he got life, but he still wasn't supposed to reach out to Sammy.
Yeah, I think anybody in that time that was connected closely to Gotti was going to get the the full force of the government.
Listen, I'm a nobody, and I got the full force of the government because I was friends with John Gotti.
Right.
When I got arrested on a policy case for my father had a number business in 89 and 90, I got arrested in 89, and it was all over the newspaper. John Gotti crew, $10 million a year policy ring. John had nothing to do with it. And not only did he have to do it, then he used to tease me and break my balls and tell me, hey, where's my end? You just made $10 million last year. I got no money. Where's my end? He used to tell me, I just go, yeah. And I went to jail for that.
Yeah.
You know, I went, because I was friends with John and because Fat Andy was my father, every time I went to jail, I went to the worst prisons and got the most time. Every time I went, even when I went to jail with captains, Nicky Carrazza, Lenny DiMaria, these guys were captains in the Gambino family. I got more time than them.
That's great. Guilt by association.
100%. I got more time. I got the most time on every case I was involved in. I got the most time, and I went to the worst prisons, Attica, Comstock, Dannemora, and everybody else went to camps and this place and that place, and I went to penitentiaries.
Well, if you can put somewhat of a good bow on it, at least at the end, I think his daughter was able to come see him.
His daughter was there.
Prison.
He died with his daughter.
Yeah, I think she said that he used to like singing Sinatra songs.
Yeah, she was played Sinatra
with
songs with him. And his son, Tori, I don't know, you know, he's like I said, he left New York. They straightened him out. He made millions of dollars. He got smart. He got out of the life. He left. He knew that he was going to spend the rest of his life in prison, or maybe he was afraid they were going to kill him. Who knows? He left. He left New York, and Frankie passed away. You know, it's an era that it's a bygone era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not too many left from that era nowadays. You know, you think about it, they're going down fairly quickly. So definitely a different time back then, different age now. Like you said, a lot of these guys have their own shows. You know, Sammy's got a show. Michael's got a show.
I have a show.
You have a show. And it's great because it gives people the insight that they would have before people would have to believe either the news, which we know the news lies, or they have to believe movies, which obviously by this segment that you and I have done here, we know movies fabricate a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah.
So it's good that you guys are able to do this and give people the real insight of it.
Right. That's the end of the episode. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And Wade, you have anything going on? What do you need?
Absolutely. You can head on over to Crime and Entertainment. We're on the YouTubes, also on all the audio platforms, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all that good stuff. We try to drop content about once a week out there. So we got also Behind the Gangsters that you and I do on there, as well as many of other great interviews. So head on over there for good crime content as well.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Well, boy, oh boy, what an episode that was. We hope everybody enjoyed that. We hope everybody is enjoying all the content we're putting out. If you are, please head on over to YouTube and like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. That way you get notified every time we drop a video. We're on all your audio platforms, of course, Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, anywhere you get your podcast. Crime and Entertainment is on there, as well as on all the socials. Crime and Entertainment is on Facebook, Instagram, and the TikToks. We're pumping away on there. Try to get at least one TikTok out a day. Get me a little bit to get the hang of those things, but we're starting to pump them out. So we hope everybody's enjoying that. You can kind of get a glimpse and an idea of the episode. We're also putting up some from some of our back episodes. So maybe something you missed before you started following us, might want to go back in there and check it out. That will do it for today's episode of Behind the Gangster on Frank LoCascio. I'm Hollywood Wade. That was my co-host for these shows, Anthony Ruggiano. And unfortunately, we are out of time. See you next week here on Crime and Entertainment.